presiding is now in session.
Please be seated. Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is the matter of the estate of Lorraine Eisberg Flaws for the appellants Audrey Kauser and Clinton Baker. We have Mr. Rob Schaub, an attorney from Chamberlain. And for the appellee Yvette Herman, we have Mr. Derek Nelson, an attorney from Sioux Falls, Mr. David Larson, an attorney from Chamberlain, and Mr. Stephen Smith, an attorney from Chamberlain. It's my understanding that Mr. Nelson, you'll present for 12 minutes, and then Mr. Smith will present for 8. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, but in reverse order. Mr. Smith will go for 8, then I'll go for 12.
Okay, thank you. All right, very well. Word of warning, the digital, we're victims of antiquated technology here. The lights do not work, but the digital clock does. So if you're wondering how much time you have left, refer to the clock, not the lights. And I'll give you a two-minute verbal so that you know you're getting down there. So with that, Mr. Schaub, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court. Lorraine Eisberg Flaws died over 6 years ago. Her obituary, Exhibit AC3, shows that Lorraine was a successful contractor. President Ronald Reagan honored her at a White House ceremony because of her advocacy for minority contractors. Lorraine didn't become a successful contractor by ignoring the federal government's rulings and orders. Lorraine was proud of her Native American heritage. She was a member of the Crow Creek tribe, along with her brother Donald. Audrey and Clinton are members, but not Tamara or Yvette. Lorraine was inducted into the South Dakota Hall of Fame because of her Native American heritage. Lorraine's will left everything to her husband and daughter, who both predeceased. Her only sibling was Donald Eisberg, who died in 1979 in Arizona at an Indian Health Hospital. Donald lived in Arizona and worked for the BIA. Without dispute, Lorraine's estate would go to Donald had he survived. Instead, it goes to his substitutes, his children, who were determined in his estate in 1981 to be only Audrey and Clinton, which determination was never challenged during Lorraine's lifetime. The BIA administered Donald's estate. It gave actual notice to Audrey, Clinton, Lorraine, and to the superintendent of the Crow Creek Agency. The BIA also gave constructive notice to unknowns. The BIA in 1981 entered this order determining who Donald's children were. Lorraine did not recognize Tamara or Yvette as her nieces. This is confirmed by the Eisberg family genealogy, which is published biannually, and it's updated annually. It did not list Tamara or Yvette as nieces. Lorraine was secretary for the Eisberg family reunions. She was proud of the Eisberg family name, used it in her construction company's name, and Tamara and Yvette didn't use the name. Lorraine, Audrey, Clinton were co-tenants in the Eisberg family homestead. Lorraine didn't include Tamara or Yvette. Lorraine gave annual gifts to Audrey and Clinton, made them beneficiaries of her life insurance policy and retirement account, but didn't include Tamara or Yvette. Tamara and Yvette could produce no letter or card from Lorraine or a photograph with Lorraine. Tamara admits that she was not close with Lorraine, never spoke by a phone. Yvette admits that at the time of Donald's probate proceeding, her presumed father was a Gene Reiling. Summary judgment should have been granted to Audrey and Clinton. Lorraine didn't consider Yvette as a niece. Yvette waited 29 years and until after Lorraine died before challenging the BIA order determining errors.
But are there any questions of fact here at all, or is everything uncontested?
No.
As far as the facts, you know, When you say they should have granted summary judgment, are you saying then there are no questions of fact for a trial
There's no
court?
Questions of fact. In
okay, that's just what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Why did Lorraine submit to DNA testing with Yvette?
That's not of the record. I believe she was curious. Lorraine was a smart businesswoman. I think she was curious.
So there's no information in the record on that?
Not that I'm...
Okay, thank you.
The statute 29A-2-114C is constitutional as applied because its time limit is valid. Yvette simply waited too long to establish her paternity. The BIA had exclusive jurisdiction to determine Donald's children. The BIA's orders are final and conclusive under unanimous authority. They're not subject to a full faith and credit analysis because they're Indian matters under the exclusive jurisdiction of the federal government. However,
isn't the issue, though, the heirs under the Flores estate, not under his estate?
Lorraine's, yes.
Yes. Isn't that the issue?
But Lorraine's heirs are Donald's heirs to do for it's an intestacy, so you go to the common ancestors and you come down. But the bottom line is that Lorraine's heirs were determined, you know, the intestate heirs were determined way back in 1981, and she relied upon that.
Well, whether she relied on it, is that the law? I mean, is that the law that you're bound by the prior estates, or is it determined anew in the...
I believe so, because I believe the BIA's order is final and conclusive.
As to hers?
As to who Donald's children are.
But is it final and conclusive? I mean, it's not like a quiet title action in real estate law. It's a probate just determines who are the parties in that proceeding. I didn't see any authority that you cited that would suggest it's like a quiet title where it's a determination as to the world at the time of the...
I believe there are statements that it is a probate proceeding. It is a type of quiet title proceeding.
Well,
I mean, you are involved with real estate.
Right, but you're only looking at who's claiming in that proceeding. Why can't you make a claim in a different proceeding? I didn't see any case law that supports the theory that one prior proceeding is preclusive to others. Did I overlook it? Do you have a case that says that?
Well, I believe the statute talks about, you know. I mean, the way the statute reads, I think you have to prove who the decedent's heirs are in the probate. So, like, Donald's heirs would be determined in his estate proceeding. And so his heirs are his children. And Lorraine's heirs are Donald's children. And his children were determined in 1981. I mean,
and how old were these children in 1981? Was it nine?
They were minors, but under the BIA probate procedures, you can reopen a BIA probate as long as you are diligent. Yvette and Tamara had, they could petition the BIA until the land was removed from trust or until 2003. So, like, for when Yvette, who was the youngest, when she had 15 years after she turned 18 to petition the BIA to reopen the probate. But the BIA has also a requirement that you have to be diligent. Once you discover, you know, that you're an heir, you have 1 year to petition the government. Or, like, I mean, I would guess they would allow if you're a minor until you turned 18. But the bottom line, Once the BIA lost jurisdiction in 2003, I think Yvette was 33 and the Tamara was, you know, upper 30s. But Yvette admits that she is bound by the BIA determination. In her brief, she states that she does not stand to inherit anything from her father, nor is she now trying to. These facts are not disputed. The statute is constitutional as applied. Yvette refuses to discuss the non-discriminatory probate process in South Dakota. When you start a probate, you don't notify people, and non-marital children can inherit just as equally as marital children, unless they're disputed. You can dispute a marital child, and you can dispute a non-marital child. What their essential argument is that the statute is unconstitutional merely by the fact that they were challenged. But a marital child and a non-marital child have the same ultimate burden of proof in an estate proceeding. And a non-marital child and a marital child are treated the same if they're omitted from the probate proceeding and do not timely request to reopen it.
I don't know that you ever answered Justice Zinder's question of whether or not you have any authority that the probate in Donald's estate is conclusive on the determination of heirs in Lorraine's estate. Do you have any authority for that?
Only that that the BIA's order is conclusive as who Donald's children are. Donald's children are the people who inherit from Lorraine's estate. They're the one and the same. So once Donald's children are determined, it determines, you know, well, like in law school, you talk
I understand your logic, but do you have any case law that says that?
Well, yeah, in the brief, I believe I submitted that.
Isn't all that case law, though, distinguishable because it involves lands held in trust?
I don't believe it's distinguishable under the supremacy deal. I mean, the federal government's orders are that, I mean, they can't be challenged. In the Spicer v. Coon case, which is an Oklahoma case, they tried to redetermine heirs in that case in the state court, and the state court said the BIA determines the Native Americans' children when trust property is involved, that the decision is final, conclusive, and cannot be challenged in the state court proceeding.
Well, there's no trust land involved in this.
No. But the BIA order from 1981 was entered and was unchallenged for 29 years. Concerning Tamara, the circuit court erroneously denied Audrey and Clinton's motion for summary judgment on the basis that once the BIA lost jurisdiction, its order determining Donald's children was no longer valid or conclusive, that the Supremacy Clause didn't apply, and that under the statute, a decedent's children can be redetermined in a subsequent collateral estate. And Tamara admits that she is bound by the BIA's order, even though it lost jurisdiction. Her argument was that she was wrong because she was omitted from what she termed Donald's fraudulent probate proceedings. But she flip-flops and argues that even though she argued she was wrong, she said she had no legal reason to reopen Donald's estate or no reason to demand due process or to prove who she was until Lorraine died. Tamara admits she may have slept on her rights. Tamara cited no decision that the BIA's order conclusiveness evaporates once trust land is taken out, it goes out of trust. But under the Spicer v. Coon case, which I mentioned, the court said, you know, this is still binding. To avoid the supremacy clause prohibition, Tamara argues that there is no federal statute that governs, makes the government the exclusive determiner of a Native American's heirs, but there is. It's 25 U.S.C. 372 when there's trust land involved. And the statute says that the Secretary of Interior shall ascertain the legal heirs of such decedent. Tamara argues that the issues are not the same for both estates. What they are, it's who are Donald's children, but they were determined in 1981. Tamara admits that she cannot inherit from Donald's estate under the statute because she submitted no proof in his estate proceeding. However, she argues that she can illogically, she can inherit through him, even though there's no provision in the statute that allows for a subsequent redetermination of a decedent's children. The plain language of the statute identifies the various forms of proof that are acceptable in an estate proceeding. Tamara didn't submit any of that proof in Donald's estate proceeding. Tamara requests equity, but really what she wants is a windfall. Lorraine did not recognize Tamara as a niece. Tamara was not an enrolled member of the tribe, didn't use the Iceberg family name, didn't have a relationship with Lorraine. Her mother didn't marry Donald. Her mother had six children by five different fathers. Lorraine justifiably relied upon the BIA order determining Donald's children. But more importantly, Tamara never challenged that order during Lorraine's lifetime. Tamara admits that she was not close with Lorraine. She didn't go...
Well, none of that's relative to determination of heirs.
But it...
I mean, if she wanted to do that, she'd have changed her will. This is intestate succession.
You have a BIA order. I mean, she followed the government's order. So when you're a contractor, you do. Or you get in a lot of trouble if you don't. But Lorraine, going to the equity argument, continue on with that. Tamara accuses Lorraine of being involved in what she called Donald's probate, but Lorraine was not the administrator of it. The United States government was. And more importantly, Lorraine received or had no right to receive anything from Donald's estate. Tamara only wanted Lorraine's money, and she wanted it quickly. And when that didn't happen, she complained to the state court administrator. In conclusion, the BIA's order determining Donald's children is final and conclusive. The Supremacy Clause blocks any attempt by Tamara to inherit through Donald. Under the plain language of 29A-2-114, there is no provision providing for the redetermination of a decedent's children in the collateral estate. Any other interpretation of that statute would render the BIA's conclusive determination of Donald's children to be a vain or idle or futile act.
Counsel, I have a question about standing. Does Yvette have standing to bring the constitutional challenge? There's much discussion about that in the briefs.
I can't remember what state said. No, she did not. I cited it, and I think it was North Carolina or something like that.
You have 2 minutes, counsel.
Pardon?
You have 2 minutes okay. Left.
She did not qualify under the statute, so under that basis, she did not have standing. Is there a specific...
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schaub. Mr. Smith, you have 8 minutes, sir.
May it please the court. Counsel, today, or Your Honor, today what we have is a question that really hinges on this issue. May an heir, in fact, be disqualified and denied their right to inherit property from an aunt, a relative, because of a qualification deemed that they're not capable of being an heir at law? Now, the appellants have taken the position that an order determining heirs issued in 1981, when my client was 14 years old, was final and conclusive against her. She has no ability to challenge this safe statement that her father was Donald J. Iceberg. My client, Tammy, takes the position that she has the right and the ability to challenge that because we have a separate proceeding involving her Aunt Lorraine. The issue for this court and the question this court has to answer is whether or not a probate done 29 years before and 2,000 miles away from where Tamara lived, for which she had no notice, should dictate her rights to inherit under South Dakota law.
Well, that might not be very fair, but I've been on this court 21 years. In that 21 years, we've had exactly two statutes declared unconstitutional. Why should this be number three?
We're not asking the court to declare any statute unconstitutional in respect to Tamara Allen, Your Honor, because what we have here is a situation where we have a lady who, in 1965, when she was born, was declared to be the child of Donald J. Iceberg. On January 5th, 1966, less than 3 months after she was born, Donald J. Iceberg, Lorraine Iceberg Flaw's brother, executed a paternity affidavit in front of Donald J. Welsh, an employee of the state of South Dakota Department of Public Welfare, the predecessor to DSS. In it, he said, "I am the father of Tamara Thayer, Tamara Sue Thayer, the daughter of Barbara Thayer, who was born October 11th, 1965. He did everything he possibly could do in 1965 and 66 to say specifically, "I am the father of this child." And what we have is, I understand what you're saying is unfair, but we aren't really asking anybody to declare any statute unconstitutional, nor are we saying that there is any reason to usurp what 2114C says. Because what we have in 2114C is a statute that applies to an intestacy proceeding that would normally be involved if we had had a state probate, but we did not have a state probate. All we ever had was a determination made in an Indian probate by a BIA administrative court, and I just want to read you what I think is really just positive of this whole case, and that is there where the administrative law judge said in 1981 that Donald Iceberg died possessed of trust or restricted property. So the BIA was saying at that point in time, our jurisdiction is limited because we have trust property and we're only dealing with restricted property. And that's what the Spicer versus Kuhn case was. Yes, it was brought after the property was fully deeded out, but the actual administrative act of kicking it to the individual who was being sued was an administrative act done while it was still in restricted status. So it was not seeking to undo a disposition that was made after the property became deeded, but a disposition that was done while the property was already or still held in trust. Factually speaking, there was never a contest raised in this case respecting my client being the child of Donald Iceberg. That's why I'm somewhat incredulous that we are here today. Everybody has to agree. Tamara Allen, Tamara Sue Thayer, is the daughter of Donald J. Iceberg. Donald J. Iceberg, who is the brother of Lorraine Flaws. What we're trying to do is say specifically that what was done 29 years before when she was a child, more worried about acne and boys and getting out of high school than worried about trying to prove who she was, she didn't sleep on her right. She had no right to assert. That's our point. She had no reason to say that she was Donald Iceberg's child because every time while she was growing up, she pulled out a birth certificate that said specifically, "My father is Donald J. Iceberg, a resident of the city of Chamberlain, South Dakota." She knew who she was. She knew what her birthright was the entire time. And it wasn't until Lorraine Flaws died that she had a reason to actually say, "Well, why am I not being included?" But Lorraine Iceberg knew who she was. You look at the record, and the record reflects, well, Lorraine asked about her. Lorraine, when she came to the funeral, Lorraine asked Tammy's uncle, is Tammy here? And the reason she asked was because she knew that Tammy was Donald's daughter. So that was before any probate was started. So later on, we have a situation where the record reflects that the aunt was asked specifically whether or not Tammy was ever enrolled, omitting the rest of the kids, but just mentioning Tammy, which lets you know that Lorraine knew that Tammy existed. She made inquiry about her. She was introduced to her. And yet the only people that are seeking to ignore her are these two others. And they talk about Tammy being greedy, but the real greed is the ones who are sitting there trying to deny that she is their sibling.
You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think what the court really needs to do is concentrate on realistically 2114 and what was all done. Everything that Donald did while he was alive, he did properly. He said and proved that I am Tamara's father. No one's ever challenged that. Did she sleep on her rights? And the discussion was had about Lorraine being a smart businesswoman, acumen above average. Well, the thing is, she could have changed her will. She knew what a will was. More importantly, if she tried to rely on this order, then that would be a mistake of fact. And that happens all the time. A mistake of fact doesn't drive decisions. Mistake of law, those kind of things. So what we have here is a situation where realistically, I don't think we can deny that Tamara is the child of Donald. And I don't think we should deny her what her birthright and heritage is. She is Donald's daughter. And I do believe that this court should uphold that ruling made by Judge Anderson. I don't believe there's anything clearly erroneous in the decision he issued. And absent there being some clearly erroneous finding he made, this court should not overrule that decision. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Nelson, you have 12 minutes, sir.
May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Derek Nelson. I represent the appellee Yvette Iceberg in this appeal. There is one central issue before this court, and that is, was the circuit court's equal protection analysis correct? Because it has not been disputed in any meaningful way, the circuit court's conclusion must be accepted. Now, the factual backdrop for this case is important. This court is now presented with a clear record on which there are no disputed findings of fact. Zero. The first finding of fact establishes that Yvette is Lorraine's biological niece to an absolute scientific certainty. It is the highest possible match between an aunt and a niece. So it's from that perspective that this court must now assess whether or not 29A2-114C is constitutional as applied under these unique facts to Yvette. The circuit court, succinctly put, nailed the analysis. The circuit court identified the statute and its intended purpose. Its intended purpose in an intestate proceeding where family reunions don't matter, where recognizing somebody during their life does not matter, but for the efficient administration or disposition of estate proceeds when somebody dies without a will applies. In analyzing what those interests are, the circuit court noted that it's the orderly or efficient administration of estates, and protecting the sanctity of wills or preventing false claims. Having identified what the legitimate interests that the legislature had in passing 114C, the circuit court went on to note that allowing or considering conclusive DNA evidence better serves those interests than the 4 enumerated traditional methods of establishing paternity after somebody's passed.
Is that not a determination to be made by the legislature?
It is not under an equal protection analysis. Under an equal protection analysis, it makes no difference what the legislature did or what it could still do. No doubt Kansas could have changed its laws that said separate can be equal. But an equal protection challenge was brought. And at Brown v. Board of Education, the United States Supreme Court said, we don't care what the Kansas legislature said or what it intended or if it intends to fix it. Under these facts and under the 14th Amendment, that separate can never be equal. It's from that backdrop that any equal protection challenge must be addressed. It does not matter that the legislature will very likely fix this, as other legislatures across the country have. As it was applied to Yvette in this case, it is, was, and will always be unconstitutional to deny her her interstate standing simply because we have labeled her as an illegitimate child, something that Yvette could not control. It was not her fault. She did nothing wrong. And yet, traditionally, classifications based on legitimacy would exclude her. But that's not right, and that's not the status of the law in 2016 in South Dakota or anywhere else.
You know, but does this statute really create arbitrary classifications? Because in this case, we have two children born out of wedlock, yet one of them has satisfied the statute, and one of them does not.
It does.
And so they're both children born out of wedlock. So I don't follow the logic that this is discriminating between children born in wedlock and out of wedlock.
It is not a comparison between two types of illegitimates. It is a comparison between legitimate and illegitimate children, upon which our laws require different requirements. Now, this court need look no further than its own decision in Irby, which established that legitimacy statutes create classifications. Irby cites Reed v. Campbell, a United States Supreme Court decision authored by Justice Stevens, recognizing that legitimacy statutes create classifications. That case cites Lolly. Lolly establishes that these statutes create classifications, and Lolly cites Trimble v. Gordon, establishing for the first time that these laws are subjected to something colloquially known as intermediate scrutiny, which means these laws must withstand heightened judicial review, substantially related to an important government interest. In Trimble v. Gordon, the court recognized that this is not, quote, toothless, unquote, review. When you review under intermediate scrutiny on statutes involving legitimacy, you are talking about real, meaningful review, the type of review that allows this court for the third time to strike down a statute as unconstitutional as applied to Yvette. And so the United States Supreme Court has definitively held and repeatedly held that statutes that create classifications on legitimacy, like 114C, do in fact create classifications. And it has not been meaningfully challenged in this case that there is no such classification. Now, the historic backdrop is important. 114C is derivative of cases going back to antiquity. I've looked at the cases from Chancery, going back to Europe, 400 or 500 years ago. The reason that these laws evolved as ours reflects is because traditionally it was very, very difficult to prove paternity after the father had died. And the reason is because people would come in and this side would have 40 relatives come in and testify, and that side would have 39 relatives that come in and testify, and he was or he wasn't some purported person's father. DNA fixes all of that. The world has changed, science has changed, and there is no reason under this constitutional analysis to deny that DNA is faster and more reliable and more accurate and precludes the need to bring in 40 people or 39 people and people who bring in genealogies and family trees or pictures of the deceased father and the purported child so that way a court can compare them. It simply isn't required anymore, but that's where our laws came from. I would note that in Lolly, there's a New York case that's a New York law that was cited. One of the things that happened after Lolly is that their legislature expressly included genetic marker testing to be permitted after the Lolly decision, so that way it could be fixed for all time. This case provides this court with that exact opportunity. The circuit court in this case noted that he would not live this lie. He would not perpetuate this fraud that Yvette is not Donald's daughter. She is. The first finding of fact, which isn't challenged, establishes it. The only question is whether or not there was some error in the circuit court's analysis on equal protection as applied grounds to get there. And I've reviewed it 100 times. There is no error. There is no meaningful challenge by the appellants saying that the equal protection analysis wasn't correct. It plainly was. Instead, the appellants have taken the position that a 1979 BIA non-determination. There was no determination in 1979 when the BIA estate was being administered as to whether or not Yvette is actually Donald's child. They didn't know about Yvette, so they weren't able to make that determination. Nonetheless, appellants assert that this court either lacks jurisdiction or that Yvette lacks standing, because in 1979, the BIA probate didn't know about Yvette. That non-decision is no basis to... It provides no basis whatsoever to tell a 2015 or 2016 South Dakota probate court who the proper legal heirs in an intestate proceeding are on a South Dakota probate that the appellants themselves filed in Brule County, South Dakota. This case is about Lorraine's estate and Lorraine's heirs. Lorraine is a South Dakotan with no tribal trust lands, no tribal property, no BIA jurisdiction of any sort. It would be just as interesting if there's any authority for the idea that a 1979 or 1981 is when it wrapped up, BIA decision would be conclusive of who Lorraine, who died in 2010's heirs are. And I submit that there is no court anywhere back in 79 that is prophetic, that can identify heirs. Heirs which our own law says cannot be identified until after the deceased's death. Lorraine died in 2010. Her heirs were going to be determined in 2010.
All right. You stated that we weren't bound by a BIA decision. Do you know of any authority, if it wasn't BIA, if it was another probate, in-state, out-of-state, wherever, that would be conclusive on the determination of heirs in Lorraine's estate?
There's no authority anywhere, and I have searched. You can't find it because it defies common sense. If this was North Dakota, it doesn't matter, back in 79, and they're going to probate Donald's estate, and they go out and they try to look for Donald's heirs, and they make a determination. That may be conclusive as to who Donald's heirs are for purposes of inheriting under Donald's estate. This is Lorraine's estate. In our brief, we concede that Yvette and Tamara will never inherit anything from Donald, but our statute says from or through. They can inherit through Donald in an unrelated 2010 estate some 31 years later. The factual and legal backdrop for this case is not complicated. It screams for a particular result, a result that the circuit court found, because the circuit court noted that he would not sit idly by and let this fraud be perpetuated. Yvette will never inherit from Donald. The BIA decision is determinative as to Donald's estate, which was probated and distributed back in 1981.
2 minutes.
Nor is Yvette trying to. Yvette, as the circuit court noted, appeared early and often. The circuit court noted as a finding of fact that she has never sat on her rights. The idea that she did, which is in appellant's brief, when she was 9 years old, by not appearing in a hearing that she never got notice of, that she could not have known about, offends my sense of justice, because that is not how our law works. The idea that there was one fraud perpetrated back in 79 is no good reason to perpetrate another one now. And that's exactly what the circuit court found. It is,
you know, on that basis. Is any of this sleeping on rights arguments on both sides? I don't really see how it's relevant in this case.
I completely agree, Your Honor. If Yvette was trying to reopen the BIA proceeding for purposes of inheriting from Donald, it may be relevant, but she is not trying to inherit from Donald. She is trying to inherit through Donald in Lorraine's 2010 South Dakota probate in Brule County, South Dakota, for which there are no tribal lands, no arguable BIA or federal jurisdiction. I don't know how to say it any more plainly. This is a South Dakota probate involving no tribal trust lands for which we have conclusive DNA evidence and a finding of fact that's unchallenged and unobjected to, proving beyond any doubt that Yvette is Lorraine's heir. An heir in this way is a little different. Heir means that she is a biological descendant. That's how our intestacy statutes are written. It is not about Lorraine recognizing her. It's not about if Lorraine wanted to give all of her money to the appellants, all she had to do was modify her will. She chose not to. And on that basis, I respectfully request that this court adopt the sound equal protection analysis from the circuit court.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Schaub, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
There's been much talk about Lorraine could have made a new will, but Lorraine was co-tenant with Audrey and Clinton for 30-some years. She relied upon the BIA's determination. You know, when you make a law school question, you know, you can know who your heirs will be if you don't write a will. And in this case, while Donald was alive, and if her husband and daughter predeceased, it would have gone to Donald. But then it goes to Donald's children. But if you look at the decedent, Lorraine, Donald's children have been determined by the BIA. And under the authority that we've given you, it's final and conclusive. And during her lifetime, there's been no dispute. And there's been no dispute in the facts that that Lorraine considered Tamara and Yvette as her nieces. She didn't treat them as that. There's talk about it's unfair because Tamara and Yvette were minors. Well, they were minors during Donald's probate, but they could reopen it. It's not set in stone. You can petition reopen. BIA's rules are much more liberal than, you know, like a Rule 60B. It's much more liberal. But you have to act on your rights and you know, have diligence. So looking at Lorraine's standpoint, you know, it was a valid order determining heirs. And why wouldn't it be? Under the authority we submitted to you, the BIA is final and conclusive. And, you know, talk about if there was a different probate proceeding, if it was a state court proceeding, it'd be the same result. There's no other proceedings here that conflict with the probate order that Donald's children were Audrey and Clinton. That still remains that today.
Now, counsel, Mr. Nelson just argued that the correct standard to apply was intermediate scrutiny to Yvette's as-applied constitutional challenge. Do you agree with that it's intermediate scrutiny?
Yes, I believe that's correct. But at the same time, I don't believe that there's even a constitutional issue because Yvette had an opportunity to prove her paternity but did not exercise that right. And based on that, she would not have standing. Are there any other questions?
I guess not. Nobody's ever criticized for quitting early. Thank you, Mr. Schaub. The court will be in recess until 11 o'clock, or 10 o'clock, excuse me.